It is a twofer. We have electrical and plumbing professionals on the morning show as part of our Ask a Contractor series. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. These are the major symptoms, right? You know, hopefully saving us from having to invest in costly repairs down the road if we can catch things early. We called in a plumber just the other day to help us correctly hook up the water and ice maker in our fridge. We weren't sure if we had a copper tubing supply issue. What plumbing or electrical issue is on your mind? Ask away, 800-642-1234. Joe Gatewood owns Gatewood Electric in Willmar, Minnesota, past president of the Electric Association in Minnesota. Joe, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Glad to be here.
Good morning. We also have Ashley Anderson, a plumbing service coordinator at H.J. Pertzborn Plumbing and Fire Protection, founded in Madison nearly a century ago. Ashley, welcome back to you.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, Ashley, let's start with you. I have seen our city workers late at night. Probably it's a burst water pipe, I'd imagine. You know, there are spotlights, trucks, people running and digging. How should we deal with a burst pipe in these cold temperatures?
When you're talking to city workers, that's a big problem. That's a little bit bigger than what department. So kudos to them working all night. But in the homes, I would suggest just, you know, main thing is your temperature, keeping your furnace, keeping your heat up, keeping any, you know, plumbing on your outside walls, keeping all of that warm. That's all important. Cold days, you want to keep your faucets a little trickle sometimes. So that seems to help.
A slight trickle, and that's to avoid a frozen pipe as well?
Yep, exactly. And sometimes there's a catch to that, because if you have a partially blocked drain, sometimes your slow trickle can turn into a frozen drain pipe. So you got to watch it all the time. These are nasty winters we have here.
Joe, there was a devastating fire in the Bronx recently. Started with a space heater. Can you share with us some safety tips with space heaters?
Sure. Those space heaters typically draw 1,500 watts, which is close to 12 amps. The most popular, general circuit in a living room or a bedroom is only worthy of 15 amps. It's wired in 14-gauge copper wire. And those space heaters really demand a lot of electrical current on those circuits. And they, if the heater itself doesn't cause the fire by its heat that's generated, it can be because of the current draw on the electrical wires in the wall. It can cause the receptacle to melt, and it can cause the wiring to melt. That may be the cause of those fires, not the heater's heat itself.
Hmm. They're not meant to stay on. They're meant to reach a certain temperature usually and just turn off on their own. Isn't that right?
That's true. They have a safety feature built in them so that they don't overheat themselves. But that doesn't mean that they're not overheating the wire that's hidden in the wall.
Okay. So there could be other things going on in the wall that we can't see. So I'm going to turn it back to you, Ashley, and I'm just going to go right at it with garbage disposals. And what should we be putting down the garbage disposal? Because this is a constant cause of consternation in our family. What is appropriate and not appropriate to go down there? Can you clear the air?
You know, I'm a garbage disposal user, so I like to put a lot, and I test the limits on my disposal. But
you have connections.
Yeah, you have connections, so I don't want to get my but yes, I mean, you'll want to definitely watch. You don't want to put like rice, lettuce, leafy things. You don't want to do oatmeal, things like that. But I mean, I put, you know, whole raw eggs in there. I throw a lot of stuff down my disposal, but you got to be careful.
So what about lemons? Because I've heard that if you put lemons down there, that peel helps clean it. Is there anything to that?
Yep. No, that's absolutely true. I think the oils help it. The rinds, I think that it definitely helps any smells that you have in there. So I strongly suggest any citrus fruits down there. Yes, put some of the skins down it.
And if you have a garbage disposal that's not working, that's not sucking things down, what should you do? What should you look at first?
We do usually try to pull the trap apart. Now, I would suggest calling your local plumber for that, because sometimes you can get yourself into a little bit of pickle. But definitely we start with the trap, just see if it's a simple, you know, standard plug in the trap. Otherwise, if it's further down the line, we have our equipment, our cables that we put all the way down. We can go all the way out to the city main if you or a septic system if you have it. So we definitely have the equipment for it.
We're talking with Ashley Anderson and Joe Gatewood, Ashley Plumbing Service Coordinator, Joe Gatewood, electrical expert, as part of our Ask the Contractor series, fielding your questions at 800-642-1234. Ed is joining us from Northern Illinois. Hi, Ed. What is your question?
Good morning. I have a sunroom addition with a cathedral ceiling, and we're getting ready to do rough-in electric, and I'm wondering, from a future-proofing standpoint, should I be running Cat 6 up to all of those ceiling cans, which are going to be in a spray foam ceiling, and doing wiring for power shades and sensors and things like that in the future?
Ooh, that's fancy. Power shades. Are you doing this yourself, Ed?
Well, I have support of, you know, electrician, but I did the addition myself. But I don't find the electricians know much about, you know, future power over Ethernet lighting or the next generation of sensors that will integrate with, you know, the furnace and things like that.
Okay. Joe Gatewood, help us along here.
Thank you. Cat 6 power over Ethernet lighting is in use, but not popular. It hasn't been found to be very practical in a residence. In fact, it's not very popular yet in the commercial businesses. It is an option. Cat 6 cable is not expensive. If you want to put that up into the hollow ceilings before spray foaming, go ahead. But so far, I haven't touched it. I haven't seen it. I've only read about it. So right now, we're still sticking with 14-gauge copper hardwired lighting. The receptacle circuits, though, Ed, I would urge you to use 12-gauge wire for those so that those space heaters can thrive on a 20-amp circuit.
Does that help out, Ed?
Sure. Every bit helps out. And I have seen there are some companies starting to do POE for residential, but it's in the early stages.
Hmm. What makes you want to go that direction?
Well, I'm thinking if I was building this in 5 years. You know, it might be standard by then. It's becoming common in the commercial space. So, and with the spray and ceiling, it's a little hard to run, to rerun wires up there. So I guess I will just bury them ahead of time so that they're in place if needed.
Well, Ed, good luck. Thank you for calling in. So, you know, Joe Gatewood, as Ed is looking into the future with that question, you know, many Americans are switching to EVs, electric vehicles, and need to plug in at home. If you live in an old home, what are the signs you need to upgrade your electrical panel? Can you walk us through that issue?
Yeah, there hasn't been a standardized electrical circuit for any one electrical vehicle yet. Some take 120 volts at 20 amps. Some take 50 amps at 240 volts. So anticipating an electrical vehicle in the future, it's best to install the larger of the electrical circuits, the 240 volts, 50 amps, because you can always reduce that wiring down to the ampacity that your electrical vehicle requires. You can't increase copper wire that's already been installed, because that would create an overheating event and possible meltdown or fire.
So how do you know you have enough service amps to supply your home?
That's when the electrician gets called in to talk with the future EV owner, electrical vehicle, to see what that vehicle is going to require. That mathematical equation then gets included after a study of the existing electrical service of the home is done to find out if there is enough power at the house.
We have electrician Joe Gatewood tackling common electrical issues. Ashley Anderson tagging in on plumbing service coordinator in Madison. How often do your drains get clogged? What's the solution? Do you have a plumbing aha moment to share? And an electrical, what issues are coming up with your lights. Maybe you have a new EV, wonder about plugging it in and whether you need to upgrade your panel. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute for more on home maintenance renovation here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing electrical and plumbing issues as part of our Ask a Contractor series on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I know my limits, and I always defer electrical, especially, and plumbing issues to the pros, but we can pick up some maintenance and troubleshooting tips along the way. In plumbing, I appreciate the handy, flexible plastic thingy with spiky barbs on it that you push down the drain and you unclog the hair and the gunk, taking that up. What tool has saved you hassle in plumbing? Did an inspection reveal issues in your home's wiring? Are you looking to install a light fixture or ceiling fan? 800-642-1234. Electrician Joe Gatewood and plumbing service coordinator Ashley Anderson tag teaming this hour. Let's go to Paul now in Madison. Hi, Paul. What would you like to ask?
Hi, a question for Ashley. I live in Madison, but I've got a summer cottage up north, and the house is about 100 years old. And I've had friends of mine tell me that I should take out the existing plumbing that's in place, which is the, you know, mostly the copper pipes that go through the house, and put in the PEX system, and, you know, to prevent anything from happening. I winterize the house. I'm not concerned about it freezing over the wintertime, but just the normal, you know, use in the summertime, something might break or burst or something like that. And then on the flip side, I've heard that the PEX system has as many leaks as the old standardized metal plumbing is. So I'm just looking for an opinion on that.
All right, Paul. Well, Ashley, first, what is PEX, P-E-X?
PEX is like a poly, it's a plastic water piping that they use. If you have copper already existing in your home, I would leave that. I come from an old school plumbing generation that if it's not broke, don't fix it. But copper is definitely the way to go. If you want to upgrade to the PEX, I mean, especially there's nothing you can do if it freezes, though, in the winter. So you can't thaw it. You know, it's got to just heat itself up. And that's the only way you're going to be able to do anything if the PEX does freeze in the winter. If your copper is not leaking at the moment, I honestly wouldn't change that out unless you're having issues with it. But that's going to be the way to go is keeping your copper in there.
Paul, does that make sense? Don't touch it unless something's in upheaval.
Yeah, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Right,
that was sort of how
right.
I felt anyway. So yeah, but all right. Thank you very much. Take you care.
Paul, thank you. Yeah, it's a great question. So, well, Ashley, let's talk about water hammer, the sound of banging pipes. What is water hammer, and is there a way to quiet your pipes? I get it when the water level reaches the right height in my washing machine. I even get it when the water supply kicks on for the ice maker. What's going on?
That's usually you're hearing is the solenoid valve in your appliance, in your washing machine, or in your dishwasher, in your ice maker, on your fridge. So it's a fast closing valve. And so what that shock arrestor does, it absorbs that shock, that fast closing solenoid valve. So yes, you'll want to put them on your washing machines, your dishwasher, you know, your lines to your ice maker if you're having that issue. So yes, it's a fast closing solenoid that's creating that hammer.
Is there any harm to the pipes at all?
It can. They can loosen up. You can, you know, loosen the joints. Usually you anchor them to the wall. So you got to support them somehow. So yes, if you don't have anything to absorb that shock, it can damage your piping, yes.
All right. Well, we're going to bounce back to Joe here on electrical loose connections in an outlet. If your plug doesn't have a nice snug fit in the outlet when you plug it in, are there issues with that? What would you recommend?
A loose connection is probably the leading cause of a failed circuit for receptacles and lighting switches. Loose connections create heat, and if a connection isn't tight, we're going to have a loose one, of course, and then it'll create heat. Many receptacles, the plug-ins in our walls, are equipped with either a backstabbing or a terminal screw to lodge the wire underneath. The backstabbing of a wire into a receptacle is an accepted practice, but it is also the leading cause of failure for those receptacle connections. I would recommend always bending a small shepherd's crook in the wire and putting it underneath the terminal screw with a snug fit with the screwdriver.
Okay. What is the deal with double tap breakers? Are they really that bad? Because, you know, you're going to get written up in an inspection, but is there an issue with having a double tap breaker?
Yeah, and home inspectors are excellent at recognizing this. Some circuit breakers are tested and listed for approval of having up to two wires underneath the tap. Some are not. So it depends on the manufacturer of the breaker that will allow or not allow a double tap. Double tap doesn't necessarily mean danger.
Mm-hmm.
It can lead to overloading, but it doesn't always. So we have to check with the manufacturer of the breaker to see if there is permission for a double tap.
And so this is basically two wires under one circuit breaker. You know, I've been able to see this as well, that is technically could be designed for one wire. We just don't know unless we look at really some compliance with the breaker. Is that right?
That's correct. In fact, think of this scenario.
Okay.
A 30-amp two-pole circuit breaker is used for an outdoor air conditioner, the compressor that sits outside that brings the cool air into the house. That's also a smart breaker to use for a 30-amp heating load, because most times in Wisconsin or Minnesota, we wouldn't be heating and cooling with different appliances on the same day. So why not use one breaker for two loads?
Yeah. We have our electrical and plumbing experts with us this hour. Joe Gatewood on the electrician side, Ashley Anderson in plumbing, fielding your questions about these two systems in residential or business, 800-642-1234. You can email your questions to ideas@wpr.org. Ashley, the toilet. Toilet, main source of water use in the home, we know. What can people do if their toilet won't stop running?
Well, definitely call your local plumber. That's the first place to start. But, yes, we would go in, probably look at, see if you're using any chemicals in your tank, which that's a no-no. That will kind of warp any rubber materials you have in there. So we would check your flapper, probably a new fill valve, see if everything's lined up or not in there. So there's plenty you can check with a running toilet.
Oh, so those little discs that are on the market that you install to self-clean the toilet, or that puts chemical down with each flush, not a good idea is what you're saying?
Not a good idea at all. If they're the ones that are already in the bowl that you kind of stick to the side, that's fine. The ones with the chemicals in the tank is never a good idea to put. That really eats away at the components in the tank. You will create problems for you.
What are some ways that you can reduce that toilet water use? Because that is just the main source of where our water is going in the home.
Yeah, well, definitely consider installing an energy-efficient toilet. So they make them, you know, you can't go any higher than a 1.6-gallon per flush toilet. That's standard all over. But you could downsize to a 1.28-gallon per flush. You could even go less than that. They have dual flushes that do a 1.0-gallon per flush. You can go down to like a 0.8. Some of them have like a half-gallon per flush. Older homes, I don't tend to use the really less water because you're just going to create problems in your drain system. But you can always consider downsizing your gallon per flush by installing a new toilet and a lot of the water utilities. So check with your local water utility. They offer rebates on installing energy efficient toilets.
I was going to say there are rebates to be had, but you're also at this kind of weird question as to, is it worth, you know, putting in that brand new toilet or just, you know, sticking with what we have if it's in the range of what is acceptable with each flush?
It would definitely benefit you. I mean, a lot of these homes in Madison, we have a lot of older homes. We have homes that still have 3.5 gallon or more per flush toilets.
Wow.
So you can think of, yes, one flush, you're going to save 2 gallons per flush just by switching to a gallon and a half, you know, flush toilet. So if you look at it that way, you're really going to save on your water utility bill, and you're going to be saving a lot of water. I mean, some of these toilets we go into still have 5 gallon per flush. So it's a lot of water wasted.
Lot of water. We have service coordinator Ashley Anderson fielding all plumbing-related questions. Joe Gatewood on the other line, former president of the Electric Association in Minnesota, taking questions on electrical work. Do you have a lack of outlets in a kitchen or bath? Do you want help installing new outlets? Do you have low water pressure issues? Wondering about how to prevent freezing pipes? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with them after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking with the electrician and plumbing service coordinator as part of our Ask a Contractor series on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Ken, trying to save time, money, and headaches down the road. We brought in the professionals to help solve common household plumbing and electrical issues. Is your electrical system really taxed in these very cold winter days? In the area of plumbing, maybe you have calcium or lime buildup, hard water problems you're trying to deal with. Join in, 800-642-1234. Service coordinator Ashley Anderson of H.J. Pertzborn Plumbing is here with electrician Joe Gatewood, owner of Gatewood Electric, here for the hour. Let's go to Vicki now in Mount Horeb. Vicki, what's going on?
Hello. Excuse me. We're on a private well, and we have iron bacteria issues. And we clean the well out every once in a while with chlorine and such. But if I don't, you mentioned not using products in the tank, but if I don't use like the little Clorox round things in there, the water is just constantly this slight discoloration, and it just immediately coats the white porcelain so that it looks terrible. And I have to clean all the time, and it still doesn't look good because the water isn't totally clean. What could we use instead of those that would help keep the water in the tank clean so that when you flush it, the water looks clean?
Well, Vicki, that's a great question. Ashley, any suggestions?
Vicki, I would suggest, honestly, starting with treating your water where it's coming into your home, either putting a filter on your incoming water or definitely considering installing like what they call like an iron filter, an iron curtain, and that would be set up at, you know, your incoming water, all of your main water supply would be fed into that. So it would be treated before it went into the rest of your home. I would honestly start with the bigger problem. It's not just in your toilet. It's the condition of your water coming in. And if you have high iron out there, I would definitely talk to your local plumber, being that Pertzborn does come out to Mount Horeb. We could help you, consider what options you should go with. If you'd be a whole house filter would be sufficient, or if you would be it benefits you to put in like an iron filter.
This iron curtain, you know, this sounds like geopolitics here, Ashley. Can you give us a little sense? Is this common for homes to use an iron curtain? How does it work?
Only in areas where high iron. We don't have real high iron in Dane County. In Mount Horeb, they obviously do. I know, like, up in Superior, you do, where my family's from. So I leave that up to, like, our local, for instance, we have local Capital Water Softener, and they would specialize in treating, you know, certain aspects of that. I would go to them to research my iron filter with options.
Okay, Vicki, have you dealt with the source at all?
Yeah, well, we have a whole house filter, and it certainly helps, but it doesn't take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what this iron curtain is, but yes, we do have a whole house filter, and we change it frequently. It gets full quite quickly. So I really like using the little round tablets because they truly keep it looking clean.
Mm-hmm.
In the toilet tank.
Well, Ashley, having a whole house filtered, would that next step for Vicki be looking at that Iron Curtain scenario?
Yeah, I would, because maybe, you know, you're treating, your filter's only treating, I don't know what you're trying to get at your current filter, if it's just for sediment, which is a very common thing to filter on a well system like that. So if you are just treating at that filter, basically your sediment and any sand things, debris coming in, then yes, you'll want to treat the actual water quality then after that and eliminate the, you know, iron from it ahead of time. And then you would put it through your water softener, you know, if you're softening your home or your hot water.
Well, Vicki, good luck. Thank you for calling in with that. We heard from John in Lake Mills, Joe. Called in, couldn't stay with us. This one's for you. John has an old farmhouse with knob and tube wiring. Previous owners, who will rename nameless, blew insulation over it. And John has been told that it's not a good situation. Is there a way to deal with it that isn't too costly?
The simple answer to that is no. There's not a less expensive way to do it. Knob and tube wiring, which was the original house wiring concept, is antiquated. We don't do it anymore. We don't support the extension or modification of it. It's best to be abandoned if it's touched at all. If you leave well enough alone, that type of wiring is at the end of its useful life. Oftentimes, if we have to do a knob and tube wiring removal, the insulation is sucked out of the attic. That's costly. And then the knob and tube is abandoned and rewired with the new cabling system.
That's a major job there.
Major job.
Okay. John, thank you for that question. Now let's go to Shirley in Spooner. Shirley is talking pipes as well. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask you, is there such a thing as piping, you know, in your house that actually expands? Like if your house would freeze up and the water would freeze up, the pipe would expand as the water freezes instead of bursting the pipe itself?
Let's call it smart pipes. Is there a pipe out there that would expand with the freezing temperatures, Ashley?
And not like what you're looking for. I mean, your plastic piping, your, you know, PEX piping is probably going to be the one that's most suitable for that. But then again, there's no way to thaw those plastic lines. It's just got to be done by heat. And I mean, on old galvanized lines or something like that, we can attach our thawing equipment to. So that we can generate electricity through and create heat and thaw the pipes in a matter of, you know, minutes or so. But with those PEX piping like you're talking about, there's no way you can get any electricity through it. So when it does freeze, you are stuck till it's thawed naturally or by heat. Heat guns, yeah.
All right, sure.
No.
Does not exist. Shirley, thank you for that question. We have Ashley Anderson on the plumbing front, Joe Gatewood, electrician, fielding your questions for the hour, 800-642-1234. Charlotte now in Milwaukee with a dishwasher issue. Charlotte, go ahead.
Yes, it's a Maytag dishwasher, and it was here when I bought the house, and I don't believe it's very old, but it washes the dishes quite well, almost really, really well. But when it goes to rinsing, it doesn't finish rinsing, obviously, because the soap is kind of laying in the bottom of the dishwasher. And it does say it's done, but why that's happening, I don't know.
Clearly not done, says Charlotte. Ashley, what could be going on?
So, Charlotte, I would say maybe one of two things. Maybe it's worth a call to your appliance man that your pump isn't working, so it's not pumping out any of the water. Or if it is working fine and your drain is plugged, it has nowhere to go and it's backing up then sitting in your dishwasher. So that would be the two things I would check, is if your pump is working on your unit, and that would be a call to your appliance man. Or I would check my sink drain and to make sure that that was draining properly, because if it's just you know, if it's plugged, it's got nowhere to go. It's going to back up and sit in the bottom of your dishwasher.
And I hear a slight gurgling sound when my dishwasher is running in my sink. I can look down into the drain and see some action in there. Ashley, explain a little bit about what's going on with the sink drain.
So it's going to be plumbed a few. So you've got a few options. So if it is plumbed directly to discharge into your garbage disposal, Kate, that's probably what you're hearing, is your discharge going into your disposal down into your sink waste. Or it's plumbed to go discharge right into a standpipe or an open pipe under your drain, under your sink, and that might be what you're hearing from the gurgling.
Okay. Carol now in St. Charles, Illinois. Hi, Carol. Your turn here with electrical. Go ahead.
Good morning. Enjoying the series. Our house is 34 years old, and we put a new HVAC system in about 3-4 years ago. And when summer came, I noticed when that would switch off, it made kind of a banging noise. And I was just occurred, I thought, do we need to upgrade the breakers or the box or something?
And so tell me again, when did you hear the banging noise?
When, you know, you're running your air and uh-huh. when it shuts off, uh-huh. you know, in our old system, you never hear it, but this one was like a kind of a bang, you know, it's a loud bang.
Hmm.
And I thought, you know, a new system shouldn't be noisier than the old system.
Joe Gatewood, what might be going on?
Well, there's several different kinds of bangs. There's a mechanical bang and an electrical bang. Most electrical bangs are followed with an odor or smoke. A mechanical bang is something just that, mechanical, like the bearings in the HVAC machine motor. There is also a liquid issue here with the coolant that goes from the outdoor compressor into the furnace, kind of like a water hammer. If there's air in that tube for the coolant, there could be some banging going on in there. A bang is never good, and it's unpleasant, but I'd say that you start with your HVAC contractor, since the banging wasn't occurring before his new appliance was installed.
Could it have been a faulty installation if it's a newer system?
It could have been. The liquid lines have to be purged of air for them to operate efficiently, and that would be on the HVAC contractor's responsibilities.
Okay, Carol, thank you for that question. As we talk with electrician Joe Gatewood, tackling your electrical questions, Ashley Anderson on the plumbing front, a resource on plumbing in this home improvement series. We'll be back in a minute for more on home improvement renovation. Your questions here on the Ideas Network. It's plumbing and electrical, a twofer, as part of our Ask a Contractor series on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Worth noting, according to BobVila.com, home improvement costs are likely to continue climbing this year. It's a mix of things: inflation, a shortage of tradespeople, supply chain issues. What home projects are you hoping to tackle in coming months? 800-642-1234. Ashley Anderson, Joe Gatewood are our resources on plumbing and electrical issues in the home, respectively, with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to Peggy now in Verona. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, good morning. My question is about our place up in Eagle River. It's a year-round house, and we're there only about once a month, and the water pressure is my concern. For example, in the master bathroom, the sinks have very strong water pressure, but the shower does not. And they're very close together, and that's in each bathroom that we have there. Previously, I had a handyman come, and we changed the shower head, and he also cleaned it out, that there was a lot of sediment and stuff built up. Why is that happening? What can we do? Any ideas?
Peggy, thank you. Ashley?
Again, Peggy, I would probably try to put some kind of a sediment filter on the water coming in. And it could be that because there's a heavier, a larger volume, like 2.5 gallon per minute flow on your shower valve as opposed to maybe a little bit less on your sink. So you're probably drawing more of water for your shower. So I would say it's probably going to be the first place you're going to see the blockage. So I would honestly try to filter it coming into the home. If it's old galvanized piping that you have in the home that might be causing the debris in there, you might want to consider upgrading the old galvanized piping to, you know, like the PEX or something that won't flake off and cause that problem.
Good luck, Peggy. Thank you for the question. Now, Pete in Bellevue, Iowa. Pete, what's going on with electrical?
Thanks so much. Hey, I had a receptacle that's very loose for cords or a smoke alarm or whatever, and I decided to turn off the breaker and take a look at the receptacle. And strangely, I've never seen one with six wires and a ground, basically two blacks and two white commons and a ground. And then in the back of it, your electrician person would know there's two black wires going in like a friction fit straight in the back of this small receptacle. I'm not sure I've ever seen one like that, and wondered if I could cap those two off and wrap them with electrical tape and see what happens. Any thoughts on where those two black wires in the center of the back of that receptacle going to? Maybe it's a hot wire for maybe a smoke alarm or a carbon monoxide, but that's what I'm actually trying to do is put in a battery-operated one.
Pete, thank you. Joe?
Yeah, Pete, the friction fit that you're referring to is what I was referring to earlier, and I was using the term backstabbing. There is a possibility of four conductors, four blacks and four whites, being fastened to a receptacle, and the friction fit or backstabbing styles are easily loosened over time. That's why they create heat. So my suggestion would be to wrap all four black wires underneath a wire nut with a pigtail that's about 6 inches long and fasten the pigtail only to the receptacle and do the same for the white wires. Wire nutting them together is called a splice, and the splice is the safest way to let the current carry through that outlet box that has a receptacle in it without relying on the receptacle to carry the loads further downstream.
Mm. Pete, does that make sense?
It does, but I'm not concerned about the wires that are connecting to the brass or the silver screws. I'm referring to the actual cord going into the almond receptacle that's so loose it won't even stay in. I'm not referring to the wires going to the receptacle, but the plug-in going into the receptacle that's so loose that I wanted to replace it. So I just kind of curious why those two black friction wires in the back of the receptacle, where they're going to. But it's not so much that the wires inside the wall are loose. It's more that the receptacle has no grip to it when you put in a plug.
Joe, any?
Yeah. Also, the receivers of the receptacle, they're related. They loosen over time with use and with heat. And receptacles oftentimes are changed out just because of that lack of physical strength, or the loss of the strength of gripping whatever plug is inserted into them.
Okay. Well, Pete, good luck. Thanks for calling in. Jenny now in Madison. Jenny, hi.
Good morning. A question about my water softener. When I add salt to the brine tank, there's a little overflow tube about halfway up the tank approximately, and water's overflowing out of that. That's not normal. I've lived in the house for about 11 years, and it's just recently started doing that. So I'm wondering if that's something that I can troubleshoot myself. I did empty the tank and look to see if there's any kind of clog at the bottom of the brine tank, and there's nothing there. And I did run it through a regeneration cycle just to see if that would clear up whatever was going on, and it did not.
Mm.
Follow-up question is, can I take my water somewhere to get it tested to see if it is getting softened? Because I'm just not 100% sure it is. I can't tell for sure.
Ashley?
Yeah, for sure, Jenny. So definitely sounds to me like you have a bad foot valve. They call it a foot valve in that brine tank, and that's what kind of controls the water in there. So you have a bad foot valve. A plumber could definitely take care of that for you. I know a couple of good ones. Then I would suggest having that replaced. My next question to you would be, how old is your water softener? If it's, they usually last about 20, 25 years. So if it's anything getting up to 20, I probably wouldn't put too much money into it. I would look into replacement and also checking to see if your water is softened. My plumbers all have test strips, so we would test it on site and let you know if it is softened, or you could, you know, reach out to some of the local water conditioning companies in town. They could help you.
Jenny, any idea how old the softener is?
I don't. I've mm-hmm. been here, like I said, 11 years. I'm going to guess, just looking at it, it looks kind of old. So mm-hmm. did you say foot valve or float valve?
Yeah, foot. Foot valve.
Okay. And that's nothing I can check on myself.
I'm not too mechanically inclined, so I would suggest not, but that's just me. If you feel comfortable trying to take that apart and going to a local place to try to find a new valve, that's your thing. But that would be a call to the plumber for sure.
Jenny, go ahead, Jenny.
Oh, I was just going to follow up and say, you said you know some good plumbers. How do you find a good plumber?
You call H.J. Purchase.
Well, I mean,
any good plumbers to you?
That's a really good question, though, Ashley and Joe. You know, how do you know that you are, you know, calling someone who is insured, who is credentialed, and that you're having someone who knows what they're doing? Ashley, you first.
Yeah, that's why, you know, word of mouth is huge. You talk to your neighbors, you talk to the people who have actually experienced your local plumbers. You look at how long they've been around. We've been around for almost 100 years, and there's a reason for that. We're a fourth-generation family-run business. So we take a lot of pride in that, and we pride ourselves in doing good quality work. So, that's our main thing. I say talk to your neighbors. Check out the actual experiences from real neighbors, real people in the community.
Joe Gatewood, how do you make sure that you're hiring a licensed electrician?
Licenses follow each electrician. You can ask for the license number of that electrician. You can also go on to the state's Department of Labor and Industry website and have a contractor's license checked out to see if it's valid. If a contractor in most states that have licensure doesn't carry insurance, they lose their license.
Mm. Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Kay. It was a pleasure.
It was fun. Thank you.
Joe Gatewood, owner of Gatewood Electric in Willmar, Minnesota. Ashley Anderson, plumbing service coordinator with H.J. Pertzborn Plumbing and Fire Protection in Madison. For disclosure, H.J. Pertzborn Plumbing, a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. So our weekly Ask a Contractor series, taking a break. We hope you've enjoyed it over the past 6 months or so, as much as we have. You can revisit past episodes with home improvement advice, WPR.org/contractor, WPR.org/contractor. And special shout out thanks to producer Courtney Everett for driving the series from the get-go. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.